Well, welcome to another episode of Data Crunch. I've been chatting with Jim Sendoma here. He was kind enough to accept an invite to be on the podcast. Has a super interesting background. He's joining us from his garage office. He can tell you a little bit about that as we go here. And he's done entrepreneurship. He's been in the manufacturing space, manufacturing rep space, innovation space, just lots and lots of things that I think are going to be really valuable for you all to dig into and hear about. So without further ado, Jim, I'll let you kind of introduce yourself and we'll go from there.
Oh, thanks for having me on. You mentioned the garage and it makes me think right away a fundamental rule of entrepreneurship. If you want to catch marlin, go where the marlin are. So that's why I moved recently to Pittsburgh, and I'm back in a garage from a nice office that I had up in Corning, New York. So, you know, I started in a garage and now I'm back in a garage.
That's right. It's where all the magic happens.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about your journey, what you've done. You know, I mean, you've been at this for decades. So tell us a little bit how you got started.
I was very fortunate in that, you know, I was always interested in the manufacturing side of the world. So I was fortunate out of school to get a job offer with Corning Glassworks at the time, now Corning Incorporated. And again, fortune followed me through that. I had a lot of mentors and they showed me the ropes. And for some reason, they liked me and they were willing to show me the ins and outs of how things operated in the manufacturing world. And heaven forbid if they didn't like it, this particular group, they were old school. You know, they were out of the 40s and 50s and they put Corning on the map. And if they liked you, that was good. If they didn't like you, your life was pretty hard. For some reason, they liked me. And I learned a lot of lessons there around project management. But the big lesson I learned is I do not have a corporate mindset. I have an entrepreneurial mindset. So I left Corning and started my own business.
There's some clashes there.
Yeah, there's just the way that things happen. And the further you move up the ladder, you think, well, okay, things are pretty bad at this rung on the managerial ladder. I'll just move up here and it'll get better. Actually, it got worse for me. And I had in my upbringing, all my uncles were independent business people. So, you know, I can remember one time had a little clash in the corporate world and I'm walking down the hallway in engineering and I'm thinking, man, what would my dad do? And the answer was my dad never would have taken this job to begin with.
That's good. Too much. Was it more like the bureaucracy, more like this is just the way things are, even though that's not the best way to do things?
Yeah, it was communication, basically. A lot of it came, it was all top down. So the success that I had, I mentioned mentors, the success that I had was as a young person, I came into the hot glass forming world and I'm like, I don't know anything. You know, it's going to take me a year to find out where the men's room is in this factory. It was, you know, from one end to the other was more than a quarter of a mile. So, you know, I was willing to listen and take advice from people who had been doing this for a long time. And management wasn't willing to do that. And they couldn't see how they got in trouble because they weren't willing to listen to the people that had put the plan on the map.
Yeah, no, that's true. The entrepreneur mindset is so different, right? And it's more, how do we create value in the most efficient way? How do we change things that need to be changed, right? What needs to happen different in the world? I think a lot of manufacturing rep firms operate like that. Oftentimes, they're not huge corporations. Come with an independent sales kind of mindset. And I think a lot of them operate pretty entrepreneurially. So have you seen that as well?
That's it. You know, so I had a successful project at Corning and I worked with a manufacturer's rep group and we're out to lunch celebrating the fact that this was a successful project. And, you know, during this conversation, the gentleman offered me a job and, you know, I didn't see it coming. I just didn't see that coming. I thought we were just out celebrating. And he says, I think you have more of an entrepreneurial mindset. And I never forgot that. I remembered that and I thought, okay, that's when it was time to leave. So unfortunately, we became friends, but he had passed away. And I always remembered that, you know, here's another entrepreneur, independent business person that had saw that in me.
Yeah. So entrepreneurship, I personally love it. I've been an entrepreneur all my life. That's why I like the space so much, the manufacturing rep space as well, just because I think it is more nimble. It's more agile. It's how do we do honest work in the best way possible? But it's hard, right? Entrepreneurship, there's not always a safety net and it's a risk, right? And so tell me a little bit about that. How have you kind of balanced the risk versus the reward of being able to create something and go and make it happen?
So a question that I get asked is, what's it like to be an entrepreneur? And I'll say, it's a roller coaster. It's tremendous highs and thunderous crashing lows. And as an entrepreneur, you want to kind of try to smooth out that curve. And, you know, that's a big challenge. And it is very difficult. I'm getting a little laugh out of the times that we're in now, because it seems like everybody wants to be an entrepreneur. So risk-taking, as you mentioned in your question, risk-taking seems to be associated with entrepreneurship, when actually, in my experience, it's quite the opposite. So a good entrepreneur will identify the risks and then take every step, work very hard to mitigate those risks or eliminate them. So we're not gamblers. We're just not out there, you know, rolling the dice and hoping that our ideas or our vision of how things can be in the future will happen. We actually are very structured. And I think a lot of people who enter the entrepreneurship world miss that. They think, well, I got to be able to take a risk. Well, yeah, there's some risk involved. And, you know, I left a secure position. I probably could have stayed there, I don't know, retired from there. But that's the risk. The rest of it is you identify the risk and say, how can I eliminate that risk? How can I lower that risk?
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. How would you maybe apply some of that? Or what have you seen in the manufacturing rep world, the manufacturing world, applying that entrepreneurial mindset and identifying those risks so that your firm can succeed, right? What have you seen?
This is a big lesson that I learned. And you mentioned the word honest. And so the big lesson I learned is that you have to put things in place to make sure people pay you, because there's two different things. There's out there being the entrepreneur, making your promises, you know, and keeping your promises. And then there's getting paid in a timely fashion. So you have to have the instruments in place to make sure you get paid when you should get paid, or if you get paid at all. I'll give you an example. Curtis, when you don't pay your light bill, what happens? The lights go out. And sometimes I did it as a young family person. You know, you're struggling. You have a limited amount of money coming together. So you sit down with your wife and you say, okay, we only have enough money for one jar of peanut butter. What's it going to be? Crunchy or smooth, right?
Crunchy. That's the answer. That's right.
You know, you say, oh, okay, we've got to pay the grocery bill, got to pay the light bill, got to pay the heat bill. Oh, here's a bill we can push out. And you say, all right, we're not going to pay that bill. We're going to pay that bill late. And what you don't realize is that it's all about cash flow.
Yep. I mean, a lot of the rep firms and things we talk to, a lot of them, the cash flow can be lumpy, right? I mean, sometimes you're not getting paid 60, 30, 90 days till the manufacturer gets paid and they have to wait to get paid. And so,
right. Yeah. And so the last one to get paid is the manufacturer's rep in a lot of cases, even though in your contract, it says that when, let's say you sell a piece of machinery, in my world, you sell a piece of machinery, $100,000, certain percentage of that gets paid up front before they start building the equipment. When that check hits, I'm supposed to get a commission part of that. Very rarely does that happen. I have to make the phone call. And if I don't make the phone call, I'm not going to get the check until the end. And so in the end, you have to be very, very careful. And anybody in the manufacturer's rep world, you have to really, really read your contract, because in that very fine print could be hidden a sentence that says, if this project or if it isn't profitable, then we're not going to pay the rep. I learned that lesson the hard way.
Did that hit you at some point?
Yeah, I called them up and, you know, they said, well, the project didn't go well. We actually lost money on it. So there's no money in it for the rep. And I'm like, whoa, I did my job. You know, I went out, made contact, got the specs. And actually, I even told them, you quoted it too low. That's the other thing. You quoted it too low and now you lost money. And now I'm getting, you know, punished for it, if you will. So you have to be very, very careful. And getting into the rep business is very, very easy. Finding good principals to represent is hard.
What have you found in that vein? If you were to talk about, how do you know if you found a good principal, or maybe how do you improve relationships with a principal? Have you found ways or strategies of being successful at that?
Yes, for sure. And, you know, so you want to sit down with that principal and you know, if they have worked with reps in the past, that's one of my first questions. Have you worked with reps in the past? And if they say no, you know, you're in rocky waters for sure, because they don't know how the relationship works. I signed on board not too long ago with a principal, and they were half direct and half independent reps. And the technology was one of the reasons that I signed on for them, knowing full well in my experience that this type of mix is really, really tough to work. And, you know, I bumped right head on into it. You know, when I brought in a nice order and, you know, we're following up. And one of the comments I got was from one of the direct guys is, wow, how come we're paying this guy a big commission check? All he saw was the check. He didn't see all the work that went into getting the specs, making the calls, and all the expenses that I accrued bringing home that. And that is a challenge when you have direct with independent reps. So, you know, you want to ask them, have they worked with reps before and what their structure looks like. And then you want to ask them, you know, typically they have a reason for bringing a rep on. A lot of times, for example, the experience I have, companies out of Detroit, to this day, it always makes me smile. When things go bad in Detroit, when cars aren't selling and all the little shops around Detroit are hurting, they sit back and say, wow, we got to diversify. We got to get out of just supplying to automobile manufacturers. Let's take a good example. Let's just say it's a material handling company. Let's say robotics. And I experienced this early on. I was reaching out to robotic companies. Now they're all over the place. But I was reaching out early on to the robotic companies and they're saying, yeah, you're right. Yeah, we want to get a rep because we want to get out and diversify into other markets. And things are down now in the automobile market. I'm like, okay. So we were working along, and I bring them a job. From the time we signed a contract to the time I brought them the job, the automobile market took off and they're too busy. They don't even want to quote it. So to this day, all these years, I run into the same thing. It's funny. So you have to look at why is the company reaching out to get a rep if they've never had a rep before.
That's an interesting point too, even beyond kind of the relationship there. But how do you recommend people go about thinking about their the mix of lines that you have as a rep? I think the reps are in a really unique position because they can, where the manufacturer, and manufacturers could have multiple products that they make, right? But the rep can come in and say, well, I have lines from this manufacturer and this manufacturer, and then I kind of create this package of products that makes sense for certain situations, or they can package things in certain ways, put products together in different ways. How do you strategize around, right, the kinds of products you want to tackle and watching the market for what you want to do there? Have you had success with that?
That's a great question. And the story that goes along with that is you want to pick your lines so that they build on one another. And a really good example is I had a line of motor controls, AC inverters. So when you're out, you want to think about, okay, when you wake up in the morning, you put your feet on the floor, what's the product that I'm going to lead with today? And you want it to be a product that will lead right into other lines, your other lines. So you structure it that way. And the example is you go in and you're selling motor controls. And guy says, I love your motor controls. Let's talk about generating an order. Well, from there, it's like, okay, here's the motor that goes with the motor control. Here's the gearbox that goes with the motor control. You know, here's the tack and all of the feedback sensors that go with the motor control. And you're building on all those versus someone who just goes out and says, I want to sell a motor. And the story that goes behind that, I had an inside salesperson working for me, and I come in off the road and he's got a big smile on his face and he says, hey, I just got an order for 10 motors. And I'm like, hey, that's great. So how are they controlling the motors? I don't know. What's the motor driving? I don't know. Okay, let's call him back. Find out the gearboxes, find out the motor controller. And then in the end, you can ask them, how would you like to have all this mounted on a plate and you could forklift it off the truck and your electrician could wire it up and it's good to go. And you could see it running before you buy it. So now you've got all those commissions stacked up. Plus, you've just become a systems integrator. This is, you know, pretty much good salesmanship. But to answer your question, you've got to have that mindset of how can I build on each one of those items that I represent.
Yeah, setting that up. And you just touched on good salesmanship. I think over and above what you're talking about, making sure you have a good product set and having that mindset to think, well, what goes along with this? How can I pack it? How can I make this easy customer? What about the actual sales prospecting component? I mean, that's huge, right? Obviously, manufacturing rep firms are sales firms. What are some of the best strategies or things you found for prospecting, finding new clients, going out there and building the business?
So the rep world is lead driven. So a lot of times principals will call me up and interview to see if we want to sign a contract. And they'll say, today, do you do cold calls? And I'll say, no, I don't do a cold call. And they'll say, well, that could be a showstopper. We want reps that do cold calls. And I said, well, I used to pride myself on doing cold calls 30 years ago. I don't do that anymore because now when I reach out, it's not a cold call anymore. It's pretty warm. You found me on LinkedIn. You know, you pretty much know a lot about me, you know, what my hobbies are, what I've done. Have I written a book? You know, all this stuff. So it's pretty warmed up. So, you know, then you send me a well-crafted email, which you did. And I'm like, this is great. And then, of course, we come together. And that's how it happens. The customer makes time to see you. And that's what happens. They make time to see you based on how you've done your homework, turning a connection into a lead. Now, the thing that happens in the sales world and salespeople, we are our own worst enemies in that regard. People say, well, sales, man, I don't want to talk to a sales guy. I don't want to talk to a sales rep. I don't even put sales rep on my business card anymore because sales has gotten a bad name. And the reason for that, it's our own fault because a lot of salespeople, they have broken the number one rule in sales, and that is, you always want to avoid wasting your customer's time. So talk about bringing value to the table. When you show up, you've got to bring that value to the table. And one of my favorite lines when I was cold calling, I would call up and I'd say, look, I need 5 minutes of your time to help eliminate a pain point that I already know you have. And it could be because I grew up in manufacturing or just through my own study, I realized that. So I got a little bit of a long story if you're interested for that one. This is old school story, old school salesmanship. So I've been trying to get Syracuse, New York, Chrysler plant. I've been trying to get to see the plant manager. And it's taken me 3 months to get to see this guy. There's no LinkedIn. There's no social media. I just know that what happens in a manufacturing plant and I have some value to bring and I'm trying to see this guy. And I always start at the top. A lot of people try to start at the bottom and work your way up in sales. I'll start with purchasing or I'll start with engineering. No, I start with the top. If I can see somebody in the C-suite, that's great. Plant manager, it's great. So it's taken me 3 months to get this guy, and I'm in a motel in Syracuse. Now, when you're on the road, you can do a couple of things. And I've seen this over my entire career. You know, you can go to the gym, which is what I usually do, or you can do your homework. So the first thing I do is I hit the motel room and I pull out the phone book and I look up this guy's name. He's in the phone book. So I figure, all right, I was going to go to the gym, but now I'm going to check it out. So I drive by his place. Now this is somewhere around Stocking, right? You could say. So it's a nice house in kind of an exclusive neighborhood, which you would expect, plant manager. And he's on a corner lot and the lawn, perfectly coiffured lawn. Two vehicles in the lot. One is a Chrysler minivan. Yep. The other one is a Dodge Viper. I cruise around the back and there's this big sailboat in the back. So what have I learned? I've learned a lot about this guy. First of all, he's very detailed oriented. That lawn is perfect. He likes everything in its place. He's got a family, got that minivan, and he's got a Dodge Viper. So he is a high performance individual. And then we got the sailboat in the back. So, you know, typically someone who's a sailor out there on the lake, he likes having that command out there against the elements himself. So now I've learned a lot. I've learned it the old fashioned way. Now, today I just go in and look his name up on social media. His picture comes up with a sailboat in the back. You know, learn it.
Yep. It's easier. How do you use the information to get in contact with him?
First two things. Number one, he's an analytical guy. That's what I learned from that. So now if he was a pictorial guy, pictorial guys, you know, they're like, you can go in and say, this is what you have now, which is junk. And this is what you could have, which is great. And he'd go, yeah, I want that over there. But analytical guys, they want to see numbers. They want to see facts. They want to see a lot of stuff. So I'm prepared to do that. So I walk into his office, and lo and behold, behind him is the picture of this sailboat on one of the lakes near Syracuse. It's just like, oh. So we're in there, and he wants to look at putting a robot to do a particular application. So he wants me to quote him a robot. And I said, okay, so let's look at the application because it may be something other than a robot. And he says, well, everybody else is pushing a robot. How come you're not pushing a robot? And I said, well, I just need to look at the application. So we went out in the plant and looked at the application. We came back and we sat down and I said, I'll tell you what, I think I'm going to quote something different. And he said, why? And I said, because and with a robot. And at that time it was a four axis robot. And I said, you only need two axes to do what you need to do on this particular application. And it's a dedicated application. So why would you pay $50,000 for each axis when you're not going to use it? You can just do that. He said, great, quote me that. So I'm thinking, okay, fine. And on the way out, he said, you're the first sales guy in here that never asked me about my boat. And I said, that's sales 101. That's for amateurs. I'm a pro. And I just walked out. And I got that order, and we developed a good relationship in which he did buy some robots because that was the right application. So the big takeaways from this are, number one, I'm selling from the top down. And here's the interesting thing about sales. When you go in there and you look at it and you're promoting what everybody else is, then you haven't really differentiated yourself. So I set myself apart from all the other guys that are pushing robots. But here's the human nature side of it. He didn't go out to those other guys and say, quote me, dedicated tooling. He just said, Jim's the guy I want to do business with. So those guys, they don't even know what happened. I eliminated those guys right from the get-go.
I like that. I think it's sort of been said, you have to have trust in sales and being reliable, doing what you say, like that's sort of like minimum requirement, right? Trust. But then if to your point, if you come in and you're like, you can prove that you have their best interest in mind and not your own, like, well, I'm going to sell four axes and it's going to be a huge number. But you're like, no, like you only need two. So like you have his best interest in mind and he trusts you.
I explained the difference between a dedicated tooling and flexible tooling, which is what a robot is. And it works really, really well. So, you go in, if you're thinking about closing that order in the back of your mind, if you're thinking, okay, it's taking me a while to get in there. I know the guy wants a robot. You know, I'm going to get in there and I'm going to close this order and you're not, and I'm going to get that commission check. And you're not thinking about what his best interests are, then you're not going to get the order. The only way you're going to get the order is if you beat everybody out on price. And chances are what you're selling isn't going to work because you lowered it down to the minimum requirements. And it's a poor way to go into a manufacturing setting.
Is there anything else from your experience that you've seen that you just think is really important, right, for manufacturing reps or manufacturers that you'd like to share that you think would help them succeed in business, essentially? Anything we've missed?
The big word for me for that question is integrity. And you have to maintain your integrity. That's all you have to sell. And once you sell your integrity, you can get it back, but it's really, really, really hard. And so people will say, well, high level of integrity. And that kind of makes me smile because there are no degrees of integrity. You either have it or you don't. And a real quick story to go along with that. So I got an order for some custom-made pieces of equipment. Now, I have an engineering background and I saw the specs. I not only saw the specs on this, but I knew the guys because I used to work with them. And I'd worked with them enough on some other projects that I know how they think. So the specs say, you know, they need to accelerate this equipment from zero to whatever RPM in a certain amount of time, maintain torque and all that stuff. And I'm thinking, all right, so I'm going to give these guys way more than they need because I know once they get this piece of machinery in there, and it does what they want it to do, they're going to go, well, let's see what it can do. You know, we want it to do more. So I'm going to give them that ability. I pretty much doubled the specs, everything they needed. And I'm thinking they're going to just flip out. They're just going to really love this, right? And the guy calls me up and he's really blowing off steam. And I mean, he is cussing me out. and I'm not saying anything. And finally, he took a breath and I said, do you still have the wooden crate that this machine came in? And he goes, oh, well, I think so. Why? And I said, well, crate it all up, put it on a loading dock, and I'll send a truck over, pick it up, no charge to you. And he goes, what are you going to do with it? It's a custom-made piece of equipment. I said, I'm going to take all the drives off of it, all the powertrain equipment off of it. I'm going to put it back on the shelf. I'm going to scrap the frame, and we'll go on from there. And he goes, well, that's a little drastic. And he says, is there anything else we can do? And I said, well, actually, there is something we can do. I said, we can put the next bigger size drives on it, and I'll credit you for the drives that are on it, and take it from there. And he says, well, what do we need to do? And I said, write me a purchase order for the next size up drives. And he says, well, how's that going to work? He said, you know, it's a custom made piece of machinery. Now, this is, again, knowing your customer. I said, I already put an oversized plate that has the 8 holes that you need in it. And he goes, how'd you do that? Why'd you do that? And I said, on the off chance that you may want it to go faster. And he goes, that was really good thinking. I said, yep. I said, you can take those old drives off, put the new ones on, a socket wrench and some wiring, and you're up and running. And he goes, that's great. Now, here's the funny side of the story. So while he's getting me a purchase order number, I'm getting him a return authorization number. Takes about 20 minutes. We're back on the line. He gives me the PO number. And I said, here's your return authorization number. And he goes, won't be necessary. He says, we'll keep those 2 drives for spares. So I could have handled it and said, look, I met your specs. I even exceeded your specs. You're on your own. In my back of my mind, I went, okay, my integrity is on the line here. This order was like $150,000 order. And I'm like, all right, I'm about to take $150,000 hit, but that's okay. If that's what it costs me to maintain my integrity, then okay. And once you accept the fact that there's no limit on your integrity, then it opens your mind up for other ways to handle it.
That's great. I love that. That's priceless, right? Essentially.
Yeah. And I've used that, you know, and it's like, okay. And it's all over the place. Somebody calls you up and then they're upset. You're like, okay, I'm about to take a $25,000 hit. It's my integrity.
Right. Because like you said, you either have it or you don't, right? But I have a little bit of integrity. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, it doesn't.
That's cool. That's a cool story. Well, how can, if people want to work with you, give us a little bit of information on how you help, how to reach out to you, what your group does.
Sterling Innovations Group. And the name of the group is, you know, we're high quality, we're Sterling, you know, it's a quality, and we're innovative people. And basically 21 years old now, I put together, and the idea was, and this is for the entrepreneurial, this came out of the entrepreneurial side. So I wanted to create a real, real space for fledgling entrepreneurs. And I like to tell everybody, we were Shark Tank before Shark Tank was cool. So, you know, you can show up, you can take space in our office and everything is there. You know, there's everything you need to set up and start a business. But the important thing is you have people around you that will look at your plan, critique your plan, fix it where it needs to be fixed, get you to where you're up and running. And for the first 7 years, it kind of worked that way. People would come in. I was the main driver. They were looking for brick and mortar, you know, and they needed a little space to start and, you know, have a conference room. So you talk to people in a professional setting. When, you know, the last thing you want to do is try to have a conversation with the dog in the background, a baby crying, you know, you want to appear professional. So that was the whole idea. Now, somewhere along year 7, 5 guys showed up and they just never went away. This is like a great team. And it's like, you guys, it's an incubator. You're supposed to start, you know, and then go out. And I joked about that. And so they're the core team. So we have strategist, we have a web content guy, we've got a consultant, and all these people came and they took up residence and their businesses took off. And then they liked the concept. We said, hey, we got a good core team here. So they're still up in Corning. And I've got a lifetime pass to the incubator just by, you know. And we talked about entrepreneurship. So entrepreneurship can be pretty lonely if you're just out there trying to make your way. And it's nice to have somebody that's been through that journey and say, look, you want to avoid doing this. And so we're that group. And so most of my lessons have been learned the hard way. So that's what Sterling Innovations Group is. That's been a lot of fun for me. I think I'm guessing, because I haven't sat down, you know, this is a good reminder for me to do that. List all the businesses that we've started. And we've probably, over the 21 years, we probably started 15 businesses. And I'm going to say five of them are still gone. And a lot of it is people find out entrepreneurship is hard.
Yeah, right. It's not glamorous like everybody makes it sound, right?
Yeah, it's really hard. I don't want to do this anymore. My boss wasn't so bad after all. I'm going to
give me the 9 to 5. And I don't have to think about work afterwards, you know, just like up in the middle of the night wondering what I'm going to do to save my company.
Yeah. And then this is, I really enjoy talking about this. And my purpose is to help other people. That's my life purpose. So whenever anybody approaches me and says, hey, I got this idea, I want to start my entrepreneurial journey, one of the questions I ask them, I said, you know, is your family on board with this? And, you know, it's really funny because I'm talking about everybody in your household. I'm talking about the wife, the kids, the dog, the cat, the fish. Everybody's got to be on board with what you're doing. And because if not, you've got one foot in divorce court and you don't even know it. So that's one of the questions, first questions I'll ask. And a funny story is, a guy came up that I knew. He said, hey, you and I have been working together. I'd like to do what you're doing. And that's great. I'll help you out. So we start. And I asked him, I said, everybody on board in your family? Oh, yeah. And I knew his wife. I said, hey, is Joan on board? Yep, Joan's on board. Great. I kid you not. True story. 2 days later, I'm walking down Market Street, the main street in Corning, and I get to Centerway Square. Joan's there. She said, Jim, you got to talk him out of this.
Yeah, like sort of on board, but not really on board, right? Like the integrity thing, it doesn't quite work if you're sort of on board. Entrepreneurship, I think, is a lot of fun. It's a lot of work, but you're right. You got to have people supporting you.
Yeah, I mean, my wife, Maggie, she's my best ally because, you know, she'll say, what are you hemming and hawing about? Go for it. You know, I'm just waiting to make sure everybody's on board, you know?
That's it. Yeah, I'm lucky to have the same thing. My kids are young, 4 and 5, and we did an entrepreneurial day for them and their friends yesterday. So they all came over and like they made lemon ricotta waffles. And I was like, all right, you got to give free samples so you can prove your product is good. And you got to show like the healthy ingredients you use to make the ricotta waffles and like all this stuff. And they're like, oh, yeah, sweet. You know, it's fun. It's fun to have the family participate as well.
Well, you brought up a good thing. And I always say there's an entrepreneurial flame in everybody. It's like a little pilot light. I truly, firmly believe this, even though some people say, well, entrepreneurship, it's not for everyone. Well, I believe everybody has this little flame. And depending upon what happens in your life, something could just turn on the fuel and that flame could become a burning desire. It could be getting fired from a job. It could be loss of a loved one. It could be you're in the middle of a divorce, you know, and you've always wanted to go, things are going to hell anyhow. Why don't I go start my business? You know, kind of thing. I truly believe that. I'm going to do a little role reversal here. Tell me about Flow. You got it on your shirt there.
Flow has been great. The brief story is I owned a company called Data Crunch, like we talked about, the crunchy peanut butter, right? I ran that for about 5 years with a good friend of mine. And we did like 200 or so projects for lots of companies in data science, AI. We built a team of about 30 folks. And that ended up getting acquired. But during that time, someone named Craig Schoaf, he owns a manufacturing rep firm here in Raleigh, contacted us to do a project for him. That turned into a years-long relationship of building software for him because he couldn't manage all the crazy data that manufacturing sales reps have to deal with, right? All the PDFs and all these formats and all this crazy stuff, and he wanted better insight. So we started working on that for him. Fast forward, Data Crunch gets acquired. I pulled out sort of the Flow software from that acquisition because I thought it could be something that we could pursue potentially in the future. You know, we showed it to a couple of Craig's friends and they were like, that's exactly what we need. We're like, all right. So just, you know, as an entrepreneur to be able to see something that fits the market so well that you show it to someone and they're like, that is exactly what I need. Can I get that right now? Like a product that sells itself practically. And we found that in Float because we were able to build it based on Craig's business, right? Like that's exactly what he needed. We built it for him. And then other manufacturing sales reps who have the same problems. And there's not a lot of folks servicing those people. It's kind of a hidden, forgotten niche, honestly. You know, the vision here is to help manufacturing sales reps be essentially eliminate all their busy work, right? Like you don't have to do data entry. You don't have to like look through your product catalog to find insights. We have AI that can pull it out for you. You know, you don't have to worry about getting paid because we'll track all your commissions and tell you when there's mistakes. All that kind of stuff bogs you down, you know?
Yeah. As I said at the top of the conversation, tracking commissions, that's a big one.
Firms lose hundreds of thousands of dollars from not being able to reconcile commissions. That's crazy, right? Like they earned it, but they didn't get paid for it. It's crazy.
Yeah. I remember my first year. I'm like, all right, I got dinked. I lost $2,500 in commissions. All right, that's okay. 35 years later, let's just say I averaged $2,000 a year loss in commissions. That's a chunk of change. You really, really did find a nice void in the market.
That's why we were like, well, we're going to do this. You know, I mean, it's, again, to your point, I think it's nice to feel like what you're doing is needed and it's helpful. And again, it's just, I think there's a lot of potential. So that's Float. That's what we're doing. Is there anything else you wanted to share? I know if anyone of our audience wants to talk to Jim, reach out to him on LinkedIn. Make sure you do your research first. And it's a crafted message. You know, hit his website. You have a book as well, right?
Yeah, I do have a book. And thank you for mentioning that. And it's called PEP or Profit and Extreme Performance. And again, I'm a storyteller. So it's a series of stories. Each chapter is a story pertaining to cash flow or differentiating yourself all along the items that we touched on today.
Well, we'll include all of those links in the show notes. So if anyone's interested in that, hit the show notes, hit the links. Jim, thank you so much. And we'll see you all next time.
Thank you.